morning. Today is October 12th, 2016. We're in the offices of the Army Heritage Center Foundation. This is Jeff Hawks conducting an oral history interview of
Dennis O'Connor.
And
Teresa O'Connor.
Okay. So Dennis, start out, just tell us how you ended up in the Army.
Well, I was going to be drafted and in March of 1970. A friend of mine was draft number 254. And he got drafted in March. And in May, I enlisted. His my draft number was 256. So I figured my number was up. And I enlisted May 27th of 1970. And I had stayed until 1985, where I was put out on a medical discharge.
Okay. So by May of 1970, the Vietnam War has been going on for quite a while now.
Yes.
So what were your thoughts as you're enlisting?
My thoughts were in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about Vietnam until I got out of AIT. And then my whole class went to Vietnam.
Okay. Where did you go for basic training?
Fort Ord, California.
Fort Ord, okay. And what was your MOS?
My MOS was 76 Tango.
Okay.
Stock Control and Accounting Specialist.
Okay. All right. And your whole class went to Vietnam?
Yes, because they were short of 76 Tangos.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed it over to 76 Delta, aircraft repair parts specialist. And I ended up in an aviation unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in non-operational readiness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we were responsible for keeping 365 aircraft flying.
Okay.
Up in two corps.
Uh-huh. Up in the two corps area. Were you pretty surprised then to get assigned to Vietnam?
Yes.
Okay.
But they waited till one guy turned 18 to give us our orders. We were in a holding company for 2 weeks after AIT, waiting for that one guy to turn 18.
Wow.
Okay. So he could go too. Because I couldn't send a 17-year-old to Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
So he had to be 18.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as he was turned 18, they gave us our orders and we got on the bus.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And we had 2 weeks leave and straight to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was when we were given normal people 30 days leave,
mm-hmm,
before going to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
But we were so critically short that they only got 2 weeks. So we got to our units, and I went up to the 14th Trans Battalion in the train. And I was held there for a month. Well, they helped, everybody was at PFC and below, was held at battalion headquarters because they were moving battalion to Tuiwa, so they needed the extra bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, as soon as they moved to Tuiwa, I went up to my unit, which was the 79th Trans Company, aircraft DS and GS.
Okay. What, did you enlist for 76 Tango?
I enlisted for 76 Tango, yes.
Uh-huh, okay. So what were your first impressions when you arrived in Vietnam?
What the hell have I got myself into? I got on the Benoit Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
And we got off the plane and we were in jungle fatigues because they issued to us at Oakland Air Force or Oakland Army Depot.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through the POR point there, and we were issued the jungle fatigues and jungle boots and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Then we were manifested on a flight. We went from Oakland Air Force Base, or Travis Air Force Base, excuse me, in Oakland to Alaska, Japan, and finally Vietnam. And let me tell you, getting off a plane at 30 below zero and jungle fatigue is not fun. But
so you had a stopover in Alaska?
Yes.
Okay.
And it refueled.
Uh-huh.
So once we got to Benoit, we got on a bus, and the first thing I heard was this sound of rockets or jet engines going overhead. And everybody was looking out the windows of the bus to see where our jets were. And the guy driving the bus says, "Those aren't jets, that's outgoing artillery." He says, "Watch that hill over there." And we all watched, and a couple of seconds later, the hill disappeared. Because they were just bombarding it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was a VC training camp, apparently. So I went to Long Bend, and I went through the PR depot there. And I got assigned to 79th Trans Company. Myself and one other guy that was with me in AIT.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Nebraska. And I spent 6 months up at, I spent 3 months at Quinon. And then we moved down to Tuiwa,
mm-hmm.
where a battalion was.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got to Tuiwa, they were having problems getting parts shipped up north. And so they put together a liaison team in Saigon. So I went TDY to Saigon as a liaison to the Aviation Material Management Center, which is under 34th Support Group. And I spent 3 months down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then in October, they're having the lower house elections. And General Abrams wanted all the non-essential personnel. This was an oxymoron there. Non-essential personnel, and you're there for a special assignment.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted all the all people that are there TDY, he wanted them out of the
mm-hmm.
city.
Mm-hmm.
So in case anything happened, they're expecting a rioting and
mm-hmm.
all sorts of stuff. This is the lower house elections.
Mm-hmm.
They were afraid they'd be rigged.
Mm-hmm.
And people would riot and so forth. But they didn't. But my sole purpose for being at the liaison office was to get high priority parts
mm-hmm.
from the Aviation Material Management Center onto SMAR flights,
mm-hmm.
which were C-130s loaded, and they'd go up country and down country
mm-hmm.
every day at 4:30. A SMAR flight would take off.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all the high priority aircraft parts to keep aircraft flying.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an interesting sidebar. I was there 3 months, and it rained every day at 4:30. You could set your watch by it.
Mm-hmm.
It would rain so hard you could hold your hand out in front of you and not see it. And then we'd have to be loading these planes up with all this rain.
Mm-hmm.
But they take off, and they make it up country overnight. And then I'd be back the next day, and we'd load them up again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a hard time getting rotor blades for UH-1s. And we had to go to Long Bend, to the open storage depot, there's a CW4 there who was equivalent of a Brigadier General as far as his power went.
Mm-hmm.
But he, we were driving on the post and went through the open storage area. And here, the open storage area, it was stacks and stacks of these rotor blades. And I noticed the tail number on the stock number. And I mentioned to my driver, Sergeant Mack, that I noticed that those rotor blades were back ordered and we couldn't get them. And they were necessary because we had hundreds of aircraft down for these rotor blades.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into the warrant officer's office, and he's a gruff old guy. And I wish I could remember his name, but I remember it was CW4 or somebody. And he told us that we were full of crap, that there wasn't any rotor blades out there. His stock control computer didn't show any rotor blades in stock. So we took him out to the open storage yard and showed him where there were about 100 of the damn things. Anyway, he got him on the next flight out. And he quit using their computers after that. He went back to the card index.
Uh-huh.
Then I went back up to Tuiwa for the last 3 months I was in country. And it was pretty quiet. We had one incident where sappers got in our wire and they were trying to take out the fuel depot.
Mm-hmm.
We had three fuel, huge main gallon tanks. Excuse me. But the sapper got in the wire, but they didn't get out.
Mm-hmm.
They were intervened with.
Mm-hmm.
And they were killed.
Mm-hmm. What do you do at a time like that? What did you do? Did you know what was going on?
No, I didn't know what was going on. But the only time I had guard duty over there was in Quinyon. I had guard duty the week of Tet.
Mm.
Tet of 70.
Mm-hmm.
71, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up on perimeter guard right where our open storage was. And there was a guard tower. There were two guys in the tower and one guy on the bottom of the tower. And there were three towers along the fence line. And the year before, a sniper had gotten up on top of this church. It was right outside the wire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like 15 feet. And a guy got up on there, roof of the church, and picked off all the guards in those three towers.
Mm-hmm.
And just harassment.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care if he killed him or not.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he made his point, we made our point, and he was dead. So anyway, the first night of guard duty, I was a little nervous. And I had a captain that was Special Forces, that was a duty officer that night. And he came out with his fancy rifle with a night scope. And he swept the area, and it was clean.
Mm-hmm.
So we relaxed, took it easy. Then the night of Tet, you have to understand, we use red tracers. VC and NVA use green tracers. When I attend, all hell broke loose at midnight. And it was just firing in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But all these VC and NVA were having a ball. They were celebrating their Chinese New Year. But the thing that was scary is there were more green tracers than there were red tracers. And that would get you unnerved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then, a couple of hours later, somebody got up on the roof. And we could see him moving. But we called in, and the captain came out. And he scoped the area. The guy had gone by then. So nothing happened. We had a Korean outfit on the other side of the airfield, and they got all tanked up. They started shooting off their weapons and having a good old time. They almost killed one of our flight line guards. The guy stood next to an engine can, and a 50 caliber round came in and landed right in the engine can. Buried in the engine can. That's after it bounced off the runway twice.
Mm-hmm.
So it lost most of its momentum.
Mm-hmm.
But if it would have hit him in the leg,
mm-hmm.
he'd have lost his leg.
Mm-hmm.
We had some drug problems.
Mm-hmm.
Guys doing drugs. I lost my best friend over there. He was doing drugs. He was with the 4th Infantry Division at Anhui. And he was smoking heroin. And he came down, going R&R. He came through Kunyan. And he stopped in to see me. And he spent the night in my hooch. And he excused himself. He went outside. He lit up a cigarette. It was loaded with heroin. And I never understood the rationale behind it. Because the first time they smoke, they throw up. And they have to smoke another one to get high. And he was hooked. And Randy Noble was a straight A student in high school. Ran cross country. He was a good guy. But something happened over there, and he saw something he didn't like, apparently. Decided to dive into the drugs and hide. Well, when he got home, He left about 2 months before I did. And I went home on R&R leave. And I went to see him. His mom says, he's not here. He's gone to live with his brother. His brother was a known heroin addict. Well, Randy, he came home from Vietnam, and his mom said he would just drink. He'd go buy a gallon of wine. He'd drink until it was gone. Then he'd get up and go and carouse around at night. And he'd come back at all hours of the morning. And he did that for 2 months. And finally his dad put his foot down and said, you've got to get a job or go to school or collect unemployment or do something. He's living off the money he'd saved in Vietnam. Well, he took off then. And my aunt told me that a couple of years later that he died in the gutter of drunk. That was a wasted life. I got a funny story. When I was in Quinyon, we were working 16-hour shifts.
Mm-hmm.
6 days a week, supposedly. It turned into 7 days a week. Well, I got done with one 16-hour shift, and it was midnight. I went to take a shower, and the shower room, they had an old French latrine. It had the pull handle,
mm-hmm.
commodes,
mm-hmm.
and shower heads that came out and rained on you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a tiled floor, and it was slick. So you be careful not to lie on your butt in the first place. I was in there taking a shower, and it was ice cold water. I took 365 cold showers. Yes, my wife, I don't take cold showers anymore. I swore when I left the country I'd never take another cold shower again. Anyway, I was taking a shower, and just as I lift my leg up to wash my foot, the round went off. And they sent in three or four mortar rounds. They landed on our runway. They blew some holes in the runway. It was just harassment. But we were close enough to the runway that the concussion knocked me on my butt. And I hauled tail out of the train to my hooch. By the time the third round went off, I'd been in my hooch. I got my steel pot. I got my pants on. And I got my flak jacket. And I was in the bunker by the time the third round went off. I hauled down that company street buck naked. I didn't care. I had to get to my steel pot and my flak jacket.
Mm-hmm.
It was all in all a good tour.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate. I had some post-traumatic stress. I dealt with survivor's guilt for a long time. But I'm pretty well over that.
Mm-hmm.
I have some violent dreams, my wife says. Well, I can't remember them. The best part of my tour in the Army was in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I spent 3 years there. I spent 5 years in Washington, D.C. on a special assignment at the Inter-American Defense College.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a platoon sergeant at Fort Belvoir and the acting first sergeant when the first sergeant would go on leave. He didn't trust any of his E-7s.
Mm-hmm.
They were retired on active duty. So he always put me in charge. That's where I met my wife. At Fort Belvoir.
Mm-hmm.
I had three young GIs that I was responsible for. They were in my barracks. I was a barracks sergeant, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I met these three kids, and
they were kids, 18.
Mm-hmm.
18.
They ran as missionary from missions to military. And they went to church with him, and they had trusted Christ as their savior. And they invited me to come watch their baptism. So I'd never been opposed to church. So I went, and they asked me, you gotta wear your uniform too. That was kind of a negative for me, because I wasn't used to wearing my uniform in civilian situations. Mostly because I wasn't too popular when I came back from Vietnam. But I went, and a month later I trusted Christ as my Savior. And that's where I met my wife. We've been together for 32 years now. We have two children. One's 29, the other's 19. The 29-year-old is working at the Art Association in Harrisburg, and she's an adjunct professor at my Messiah College. And I got a 19-year-old in Alabama going to the University of Alabama.
I have a few questions.
Sure.
So, great story, and thank you for sharing. I know some of it was tough. So it was some tough to relive the past sometimes. You were originally from the Carlisle area?
No, I'm from Los Angeles.
Oh, you're from Los Angeles. Okay.
Yes.
So where were you living when you enlisted?
I was living in L.A.
You were living in L.A.?
I was living in downtown L.A.
How did you end up in Carlisle from Los Angeles?
That's what I always ask.
I was working at the National War College.
Okay.
And they downsized, and I got transferred up here.
Okay.
To the Army War College.
Were you still in uniform at the time, or
no?
Okay.
As a civilian.
Uh huh.
And I came up here as a. They told me I couldn't get promoted. I couldn't get a raise when I came up here. I came up here, I was making $16 an hour as a senior printing operator at the National War College. I came up here as a shop foreman, which was an upgrade. I was making $18 an hour. So I don't know where they come up with, you couldn't get a promotion or a raise. I got both.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year later, I got the printing officer's job. And I did that for 16 years.
Okay.
I retired from the War College in 2003.
Okay. Okay. When you were in Vietnam, what were the general living conditions like? Where did you stay? I mean, you had several different places, so tell me about them.
Yeah, at Quy Nhon, they had wooden hooches that had been there for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were cockroach infested. And we had wooden wall lockers that we've had Papasan make for us.
Mm-hmm.
Papasan can make anything with it for a carton of cigarettes. And we had good living conditions. We had four guys to a hooch. And you had your own wall locker. And you had a foot locker. And the only bad thing about the hooch was, my hooch was here. The latrine was here. The mess hall was here. There's a crematorium here. So when they fire up the crematorium, the mess hall and the train all at once, it stunk bad.
This the crematorium was on post?
No, it was outside the wire.
Oh, okay, okay. Oh, wow.
The post was surrounded by the city.
Okay, got it.
It was a horseshoe shape.
Uh-huh.
And so I wasn't exactly sad to leave Quy Nhon and go to Tuy Hoa.
Mm-hmm. Now the latrine, are we talking about a cesspool, or are we talking about cans and burning?
No, we're talking about a cesspool.
Okay.
In Quy Nhon.
Okay.
In Tuy Hoa and everywhere else, it was It was burning.
Mm-hmm.
And in Quinion, we burned, but we had burn barrels for the little trains near work.
Mm-hmm.
And at Long Bend, they had burn barrels. I had an interesting thing happen to me at Long Bend when I was processing to go up to the country. I had to go to the bathroom. And so I took my famous Stars and Stripes and I went into the reading room. There was a door on each end. It was a long latrine.
Mm-hmm.
It had about 20 holes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was a POR center.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was sitting there minding my own business and the door opened up. So I glanced up casually. And here came this big rat. This is as big as a cat.
Hmm.
And it came in and looked around and went out the other door.
Oh, God.
Excuse my language, but I don't ask that place in a hurry.
Wouldn't you like to do that for your spring break?
Okay. And that was at Long Bend?
Yes.
That was, okay.
You had to make sure there were no rats in the burn barrel before you sat down.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you get a real surprise.
I'll bet. Okay. What about the chow?
We ate water buffalo 7 days a week. We ate roast beef 7 days a week. They said it was roast beef, but I swear it was water buffalo. They said it was as tough as shoe leather.
Uh-huh.
And the food was lousy.
Hmm.
The last 3 months I was there in a Tuiwa, we stole rations, sea rations from 1949. And they were better than the food they served in the mess hall. The food I had, the basic training, was excellent. We had a mess sergeant, Sergeant Castillo. I'll never forget that man. He put together a meal, and it was like he was serving fine French cuisine. And he was proud of his food. And his cooks were proud of their work. And when I got sent back to the States, I ended up at Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And don't you know who was there? Sergeant Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
So I ate good at Fort Huachuca, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in Quinion, the food was unedible. In Tuiwa, it was no better. And like I said, we spent the last 3 months I was there living on sea rations.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't figure out where the sea rations were going, so they put a steel cage around it.
Yeah.
Using metal
dividers?
No.
Perforated fencing. Steel plate?
No.
No.
Oh, chain link?
Chain link fence.
Chain, okay.
Yeah. So they put chain link around it on top so we couldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't bolt it down to the floor, though.
Wow.
So we get the forklift out and lift the thing up and help ourselves to the sea rations. Lower it back down, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
But the sea rations were 1949 dated. This was 1971.
Wow.
So still, you do the math.
Still good, though.
Yeah, they were still edible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you have a lot of Vietnamese civilians working on your posts? And what kind of interactions did you have with them?
Yes, we did. There were hooch maids. And we had some civilians working in our stock control section. And they would police up the area and keep it clean. And they had a snack bar out on the flight line where you get these nasty, greasy donuts. They were terrible. But we managed to wolf them down.
Mm-hmm.
But the Vietnamese people were good people.
Mm-hmm.
We did them wrong. We should have fought that war at the end. We didn't. We quit on them. And I'll never feel good about that. But I don't have to answer for that.
Mm-hmm.
The politicians do. Yeah, they were good people. We had a hooch maid in Quignon. Her name was Na. And I came in one night, I was beat. And I flopped on my bunk. And I always kept my wallet in my hip pillow case. I got up the next morning and showered and shaved and went to work, and I left my wallet in the pillowcase. And I had just gotten paid. And I came back to lunch, to eat lunch. And I stopped in my hooch. And Noah was cursing me up a blue streak. Why you leave your wallet? You're number 10. And I said, no, I didn't. She says, no, you count your money. She wanted it. Understood that she didn't take anything, and she guarded my money. After that, I knew I could trust her with anything.
Mm-hmm.
She was a good lady. We had General Trong. He was a burn barrel guy. He would take care of all the burn barrels. And we elevated him to 4-star general when we left Quignon. And he had a uniform with 4 stars on it. They were good people. We had civilians down in Saigon, the Aviation Material Management Center. And we had civilians at Thuy Hoa and Quignon. We had the least amount in the Trang. And I don't know why that was, but all we had was hooch maids there.
Mm-hmm.
But for $5 a month, they'd wash and starch your uniforms and iron them, spit shine your boots, and clean your hooch.
Mm-hmm.
And that hooch was spotless. The shoes were always spit shined properly. And by the end of the day, they looked like they'd been dragged through a war zone, literally. And yet, the next morning, they'd be spit-shined and ready to go again. And all that for $5 a month.
Hmm.
So you couldn't beat that with a stick.
Nope. During the typical conduct of your day's business, did you typically have a weapon with you, or were your weapons in the locked up? Or?
No, our weapons were locked up.
Okay.
The only time we had weapons was on guard duty.
Okay.
We had them locked and loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we never had to use them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me about going home. Tell me about leaving Vietnam.
Leaving Vietnam was bittersweet. I didn't leave my friends there. And the spring offensive started right after I left.
Mm-hmm.
I left in December 71. and I was there from December 70 to December 71. And I left my friends, and I was going to extend for 6 months, but I had the occasion to go to the USO and use the phones, and I talked to my parents, and they talked me out of it. And in retrospect, I'm glad they did, because my unit was disbanded and moved up to Pleiku. And they got hit pretty hard by the spring offensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I might not have survived that. But coming home was a unique experience. I couldn't talk to my parents about it. I had no one else to talk to. So I didn't enjoy my leave. My friends didn't understand where I was coming from. And so I couldn't talk to them about it. So I kept it all bottled up. And I kind of went off the deep end for a while. I drank heavily. And I got stationed in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. And I was there for a couple of months. And I was working at the field printing plant because I'd been reassigned into printing. Because when you came back from Vietnam, they'd give you anything you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the Army to be reclassified from a 76 Tango to an 83 Foxtrot. And I was an offset pressman, and I was working at the field printing plant, and I was the only GI in there. All the rest were civilians. And then we got a new kid in. He was on a program the Army had for guys that were getting out of the Army. They wanted to go into civilian life, and they'd train them. They gave them 3 months of on-the-job training, so they had a better chance of acclimating themselves to the civilian world. And we would trade off. He'd get one payday off, I'd get the other payday off. We had payday activities. Well, we had a civilian foreman that was in charge of the shop, and he screwed the kid over on his day off, and I got into it with him, and I called my sergeant major up, and I said, I want out of here. I want out of here fast. Get me an assignment in the Far East. And the best he could do was Hawaii. So I went to Hawaii. And I was in charge of the print shop there. And I was there for a year and a half. It was a great assignment.
Mm-hmm.
The only bad thing was we had to downsize. When we got kicked out of Schofield Barracks because the 25th Division came back. And we had to move down to Fort Shafter. So we had to downsize. They did away with my print shop. And combined it with the one at Fort Shafter. Unfortunately, there was no assignment there for me. So I waited 8 months. 8 months I worked in the general staff. And I was a gopher. And he finally got me an assignment to Washington, D.C. And I lucked out on my 201 file. It said that I had Spanish experience. Yeah, I took Spanish in high school, but I didn't speak it. But that got me an assignment to the Inter-American Defense College.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 5 years there. And then I had to leave, because if I wanted to get promoted, I had to have some upward mobility. So I took an assignment in Heidelberg, Germany, at the headquarters Usier. I was in charge of the field printing plant there. And I spent the last 3 or 4 months TDY to straighten out the field printing plant in Rodelheim, because they messed up their classified section and they had a big problem there.
Mm-hmm.
They had tons of classified material that needed to be destroyed, but they had no way to destroy it. So I had to take care of that. And I got it halfway done before my tour ran out. But at that point, I went to Fort Belvoir as a platoon sergeant. And I was there for a year. And I got reassigned to recruiting duty. And I ended up in Dallas, Texas, at the Plano recruiting station. I was there for a year and a half. I had 2 back surgeries, and my services were no longer needed by the Army because I wasn't deployable.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me out on a medical, and I'm 100% disabled now because I've got Parkinson's. And so everybody knows how to do the Agent Orange. But who knows?
Yeah, the Army's not too excited to have people look too deeply into that link.
I imagine not.
Yeah. Okay, so you were in for a total of 15 years. Lots of changes during that time period. You went in a drafty Army, came out during the volunteer Army. Did you, I want to go back to the homecoming. Did you run into any, did you have any personal experiences with the anti-war demonstrators?
Yes.
Okay. I have a feeling there's a story here.
I hate this part because I'm from Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And it irritates me that you're going to tell that, right?
You don't. If you're uncomfortable with the story, you don't have to.
No.
You know.
What are you talking about?
What happened in Virginia with your uniform on? I don't think people should act that way at all, anyhow. Especially, it just irritates me in Virginia, of all places.
Mm-hmm.
You don't expect a young man, I don't expect anyone, young man, old man, woman, I don't care who you are. If you're wearing a uniform of the country you are in, I don't expect you to be spat on. That fries me. It really fries me.
And I reached a point where it was the worst was when I was on a recruiting assignment out in California. They had a program called Unit of Choice Recruiters. And I was in 72. And they were still drafting. And the recruiters would get a list of all the guys that were going to be drafted. So I'd get a hold of the list, and I'd go talk to the guys before they were drafted to try and get them to the list. We went out to Pierce College, and they were having a job fair, and they invited us out to be part of it. or as these protesters showed up, and we were called all sorts of names and spit out. And there was a guy who was from the Jewish Defense League, and JDL stood up for us, and they put the riot down. These guys were on the state, on the verge of rioting. But the JDL kids took care of it. And that was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a shame that we had to be treated that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it reached a point where we were told not to wear a uniform off duty. So things have improved in that vein, because now you can wear a uniform anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I was in 88 to 92, and we were told you can wear your uniform if you're just off post for a quick errand, or if you live off post and you're stopping to do an errand on your way home. Mm-hmm. But other than that, so you know, if you're running out to buy a sandwich during Fort Lewis. So if you're running out to buy a sandwich during lunchtime, you know, or get a pizza, pick up a pizza for dinner or something, you happen to be in uniform, that's okay. But if you're going to the mall or the store to go shopping or out to a restaurant to eat, no uniform.
Yeah.
So
that's ridiculous.
It's gotten, I'll tell you, this felt pretty good to me. I was in college, during the invasion of the initial invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, as you can imagine, some of the college students got really fired up about it. They had a slogan, which was "Support the troops, oppose the war."
I remember that.
And I thought, I told some of them, I said, I think, you know, you're doing it right. You don't like what the political decisions that are being made, but you're not blaming the guys in uniform for it. And I think the country kind of learned a lesson. It was a lesson we shouldn't have had to learn, but it was one we did learn. So, looking back on Vietnam, what do you think?
I think I'd do it all over again if I had to. It was overall a good experience. The country is beautiful. The country is so green, except for the areas where we dug it up and Agent Orange it. But the people were friendly, and they may not have liked the war, but they, I'd say, well, all in all, they like the GIs. I have to say, minus a couple things, it was a positive experience.
And what would you say to a young person today who is contemplating this, joining the service?
I think we should bring the draft back. I think the volunteer army has turned into a thing of kids looking for college money. And that's the easiest way to get it. I don't think it's right that, I'm just speaking off the top of my head now.
It's fine.
I don't know if statistics would prove it out, but I think the majority of the guys coming in the military now are from the middle class. And we had a hard time getting guys to qualify when I was on recruiting duty. These kids were dumb as rocks. And they had high school educations, and they couldn't pass the entrance exam. But I think it'd be more equitable if they started the draft again, because you get a cross section of all people. And I'm definitely against women in combat. I think it's wrong. And that's all I'll say about that.
Okay. Anything you'd like to add before we call it a day?
No, I think I'm good.
All right.